changes in the electronics and cars and that stuff, it's going to be big.
Anyone who's even casually picked up an automotive magazine lately knows that vehicle makers are restructuring, getting ready to make more electric and hybrid models. And for Michigan, especially, that is a huge deal. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. GM affirmed its place in the electric game this week, announcing that it will aspire to sell only electric vehicles by 2035. You notice that word that they use, aspire? Leaves a certain amount of wiggle room, doesn't it? But even if the country doesn't bullseye that target, this is a brand that has focused for so long on internal combustion engines. The gearheads just call them ICE. What does it mean for GM to commit to electrics like that? And what will more electric cars mean for the rest of us? Tim Soles has been confronting this change for a while now. He's an auto mechanic and the co-owner of Steve Steeb's Service in Ann Arbor. You could say he's on the front line of electrification. Hey, Tim.
Thank you for having me.
Do you remember the first time that technicians got an electric or a hybrid in the shop for real?
It was probably early on in the mid-2000s with Priuses, and it was like, we went to training and it was like, everybody's like, this is going to be scary. When you went to the training, you learned that it isn't as bad as it is. I think it's going to be a good thing for everybody.
This can't have been the only shift in the industry that's affected auto mechanics or your work in your professional lifetime. How would you compare the scale of the change that's happening now with other times that obliged people to develop new skills and start looking at cars in different ways?
The technology changes faster. Over the past few years, I've noticed different systems are changing year to year versus every 5 years.
Yeah. How would you describe how the physicality is different working with electric vehicles?
Physically, the cars are the same. Cars are always the same. As far as the systems under the hood go, you're seeing less and less moving parts, and you're seeing more and more parts that are actually electronically controlled.
I know that the decreased number of parts in electric vehicles is an issue for a lot of auto suppliers, but is it either here or there from the mechanics perspective?
From the mechanics perspective, it's more of a training situation where you need to know what you're dealing with at the time you're dealing with it.
I know that some manufacturers like Tesla are really trying to discourage any repairs or modifications or aftermarket. I mean, they want people to take those cars to a dealership. Do you worry about some of the other automakers either mandating that or just trying to engineer their cars so that people have a more difficult time working on them?
I think they're trying to separate a little bit of the more technical stuff from the aftermarket, but I think it's going to be a learning curve as we go down the road. I think a little more of it's going to be adapted to the aftermarket as well. I feel that they're going to try to push a little bit of the aftermarket out of there.
Just one more question. Are there any tools in your technician's arsenal that you see changing or stuff that they have used that's just been a really classic piece in the past that maybe it's less important as vehicles electrify?
As vehicles electrify, when I started out, you needed wrenches and sockets and stuff like that. As these cars evolve, you have to use your brain and use computers to diagnose the vehicles. Over time, I think there's not going to be a lot of tools involved.
Software, software, software.
It's all about computers now.
Tim Soles is the co-owner of Steve Steeb's Service in Ann Arbor. Tim, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
We've got to take a break. In a minute, we'll dig a little deeper into GM's announcement to produce only electric cars by 2035.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
We've invited a couple of folks to talk about GM's announcement and related developments. Aaron Marquis is the managing editor for Jalopnik, and Daniel House is a senior editor and columnist at the Detroit News. Hey, you two.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Dan, what's in it for GM to be the first major U.S. automaker to make a pledge like this?
Well, initially, I think you've got to say the communications aspect in a new administration is about as good as you can get. And I think that is driving a little bit of the skepticism about why now. I mean, this is a company that just a few weeks ago was part of a Trump administration lawsuit challenging California's right to set its own emissions standards. They dropped that, got out of that lawsuit, angered rival automakers who were also on the same side of the argument as they were. And then within a few weeks, they take this pledge. It looks a little opportunistic. All that being said, it is a major, major move, and it indicates the direction that at least one company thinks this industry is headed. And I think they're responding to not only a new administration in Washington, but regulatory moves in key markets like China and the European Union.
At the same time, they couldn't have come up with this exactly overnight. I mean, Aaron, maybe it's not a surprise that a major automaker might be reacting to who's in the White House and a significant policy shift there. But do you think there's any real sort of dysphonia about this decision?
I actually think Mary Barra made a lot of smart moves under Trump. There was never keeping him completely happy, but she angled GM to really start working on an EV future while keeping up a communications position that they were really staying on the side of the current administration. So it's not that big of a surprise. GM has been talking about significant electrification since 2019, really. I'm looking at a list of over 31 countries and states right now who have made a pledge to ban ICE vehicles by 2040. And it's actually kind of surprising to me that GM is the one to make this move. Toyota and Nissan, both of whom are on that side of suing the federal government for the CAFE or the CARB standards, they started off the electrification revolution, and they've fallen so far behind that now Nissan is saying they don't expect significant electrification until 2040. Sometimes, or 2050. GM is a huge company. They usually make slow changes. They usually have to like really be harangued into it. So for them to be looking forward like this, this is not something that came out of the blue. And it's really kind of an impressive move for the company.
I agree with that. I don't think it is something that necessarily came out of the blue. I think it was, to your point, a part of an iteration. But the GM that you describe, I think accurately, is not the GM of today. One of the analysts that we quoted in our story this morning says GM is going to where the puck is going to be, not where the puck is. They are making a big move here. They are using words like aspire, pledge. There's no guarantee that they're not going to be selling ICEs after 2035, at least at now. One of the things that's important here is the positioning of the company. If you go back and look at the performance of General Motors stock since it emerged from bankruptcy and did its IPO, it traded in a very narrow range in the mid-30s for a very, very, very long time. And it's only been in the last probably 6 months. It's actually only been in the last few weeks that it broke $50 a share. And I think that's in part because in the investment community, which is very enamored of electric vehicles, particularly because of Tesla, is looking to see, are these legacy manufacturers for real? Can they really do this? Can they really pivot to electrification? And I think the story for GM is increasingly the answer is yes, that the investment community does believe that they can do this.
what do you see that path being from A to B, Dan? I mean, the other thing investors love right now is the fact that GM doesn't make money on its SUV and truck sales.
Well, that's right. I mean, we have to remember that fundamentally all the money that they make in the automotive space, it comes from pickups and SUV and SUVs. They're going to continue to need to do that. I think one of the things, at least from GM, that I find a little disappointing is an unwillingness to talk about the ramifications, particularly for hourly workers on the shop mm-hmm. floor. The UAW did a white paper on this in 2019 about the opportunities and also the concerns of electrification. I mean, you're talking about a powertrain that has 2,000, roughly an internal combustion engine powertrain that has roughly 2,000 parts going to an electrified powertrain of about 20. The state of Michigan is number one in transmission production in the United States and number two in engine production, and actually in North America. So, I mean, you put all those people in, you're talking about, I forget the number was in our story this morning, easily five figures of people who are working in technologies that will be essentially made obsolete. Now, the question obviously is, can some of those people be redeployed in making powertrain? I think the electric powertrain, the answer is probably yes, but probably not the same amount. And so I think, and you see Jim Farley at Ford, who has actually publicly raised this point, basically saying, we need to be more honest about what the implications are for electrification on our workforces. And right now, companies like GM don't really want to talk about that.
Is this something that is overtly discussed in union negotiations, Dan? Do you know?
In negotiations, no, because it's not to be very crass about it, it's not in the window of the next contract. So if it's not in the window of the next contract, it's something you leave for the next people to worry about. You don't worry about it. I think that's why you have a research department that does this. They're thinking about it. But I get a little troubled when the president of the United States comes out and says, I'm going to create 1 million new jobs. And okay, well, we don't know what kind of those jobs are going to be. And the near-term effect in the industry could in fact be negative. And there could be other kinds of people, but the kinds of jobs that exist today are not going to exist in an electrified powertrain.
And we saw that with GM restructuring, a couple of years ago, getting rid of those or idling those four plants, cutting down their workforce. They were already positioning themselves for a lighter workforce in order to move into the EV realm.
Yeah. Aaron, what have you been seeing happen with the sector that's working on electric versions of larger vehicles, like trucks, especially trucks for commercial use?
There's a lot of really interesting companies out there. Unfortunately, I take a little bit of a skeptical view of these bigger, brand new companies like Nikola or Lordstown. They're just not proven, and there's a lot of, we call it vaporware there, where there's a lot of ideas, lots of big orders, but not a lot of delivery yet. There are other bigger manufacturers like Volvo Trucks, and a lot of those manufacturers are actually looking at fuel cell technology. So I don't know if electrification really applies to like the big trucks, like if we're talking like semis and stuff like that. Of course, you've got the Hummer EV coming out pretty soon here. And Hummers already are just such a niche market. I'm not sure how that's going to really play out. The entire point of the Hummer back in the day was that it was a big, growly truck. And now I question if your Hummer buyer 25 years ago is really going to be pulled in by an EV.
I mean, the ethos of the Arnold years was, I mean, let's just say it. It was about the least environmental thing you could spend your green dollars on at the end of the week.
Right, which is exactly why GM's doing what they're doing. I mean, they're trying to change the brand and the conversation to say that, EVs are not these effete little boxes. They can be really powerful, brand conscious vehicles.
When we think about, the average consumer who's maybe driving, an internal combustion engine SUV right now, How long before the offerings that GM and the other automakers are doing are talking about, how long before those become more of what we come to think of as normal?
I was just talking about this with my team because Genesis is announcing some electric vehicles today. And they're always naming these electric vehicles with an E at the end or a plus. And my thinking is, these are normal cars, name them like normal cars, so consumers feel like they're buying normal cars. I think it's going to take like a major culture shift. And, you know, Americans are also, we still have that range anxiety, which is a little ridiculous. And I think we're seeing more and more often, especially now that we're all in COVID lockdown, how little we're actually driving. And you're also seeing superchargers and batteries that are capable of charging just as fast as a car is capable of fueling up. They're not here yet, but they're on the horizon. So I think once you, the best way to cure America's range anxiety is to get that charging infrastructure faster and more complete. That's going to take a lot of investment from both the automakers and from the federal government.
I think we're going to go through a period here where different companies are going to try different things, and we're going to see how they take off. I mean, Tesla has been phenomenal, but it's very much a premium product. And, you know, we're going to see here as major manufacturers come online with a lot of their different EV offerings, just how broad the market is. We know that there is a high-end market for these vehicles, but how broad is the market? And I don't think we know that yet.
Daniel House is a senior editor and columnist at the Detroit News. And we've also been talking with Aaron Marquis, managing editor at Jalopnik. Aaron, Dan, very nice to talk to you.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks very much.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. Always remember, you can stream full shows of Stateside at michiganradio.org. And if you are listening to us via podcast, please remember to rate us and drop us a review. Helps more people find what we're doing. Our executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Ishikawa. Our theme music is by 14KT with additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks so much for listening. Have a safe weekend. We'll catch you on Monday.